powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Welcome to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill, along with Matt Butler. Good evening, Matthew.
Good evening. I'm glad you still know who you are.
I'm fine.
It would be really
man.
Confusing if you thought you were someone else, but given the week that you've had working so much, I would be surprised.
It's the month I've had. Matthew Butler, this is the time of my life. People have been very gracious here at Cairo News Radio and in our audience as well. The text line, 888-973-5476. People have been gracious, been supportive, been a little concerned at times. People often text and remind me what day it is, which is helpful, very helpful. I've been doing this job now here at Cairo it's been about 8 months, I want to say. Matt and I have had a chance to do Cairo Nights, and I take great pride in being available to help Cairo cover shifts when needed. I've worked at this point every shift around the clock except for AM Coast to Coast with George Norrie. I've been trying to buy into the conspiracy theory world, Matt. I just can't wrap my head around. I believe they're out there. I just can't fake it that I've seen them, at least not while sober. So I love working the shifts that I've been able to work here. Jack Stein and I have had the honor of doing the 12 to 3 show, and we're going to keep doing that for a few more weeks at least, and maybe longer. Who knows? We'll see how it goes. We'll see how the audience reacts to this. And that point is... thanks, Matt. I appreciate your help and your support. I couldn't do this without you, whether it be middays or here. I know you're going to be doing some middays with us as we move pieces around the board here at Cairo. Our main job is this, making sure you, the audience, gets it. It's make sure you get information that you need and stories that are interesting to you told from us with our perspective, something that you can sometimes agree with, sometimes have an issue with or a problem with, and that's fine too. We want to make people think about things and inform you about what's going on in your community. To that end, right now, we're going to go live to Cairo News Radio's Nicole Jennings. Oh, listen to that echo. This is like real radio. And all the ships
reverb,
at sea,
like
I know.
60s, man.
Nicole, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Thank you so much for being on site. Now, you were at the school board meeting where the vote was taken to close these two elementary schools. It's Eastgate and Wilburton, if I'm correct.
Yes, Eastgate and Wilburton Elementary Schools. That vote just came about half an hour ago, and there's actually a video on my Twitter of what happened after the vote was taken. Let me tell you, Spike, I've sat through a lot of school board, city council, county council, you name it, meetings, but I have never seen anything like what happened tonight. The room just erupted. Parents were yelling at the school board, yelling shame, or, you know, how can you look at yourselves in the mirror? How can you sleep at night? And then they began chanting. They said, one more year, one more year. They wanted the board to take one more year to make its decision. Oh my goodness, I have never seen such a public reaction like that. It was very emotional. A lot of people are very upset tonight.
Now, these schools that were closed, were announced to be closed, there were three that were potentially up for closure on the block, along with, I think it was Artmore was also up for closure.
Yeah, there were a couple of different plans that had been floated around in the last couple of months. This all came about kind of since Christmas break. The most recent plan, well, before this last week, was to consolidate or effectively close, fold these schools into other schools, three elementary schools. Ardmore was on that list, as well as Eastgate and Wilburton. Now, just in the last week, they took Ardmore off that list. So it's just now just closing the two elementary schools. But what a lot of people were proposing tonight, as well as a couple of the school boards, members was, okay, if we need to cut costs, well, why not, instead of sacrificing two entire schools, why not cut a few costs from every school, spread it out a little more?
That's a reasonable request. So there was a $31 million budget shortfall, which caused this situation to make these and the school board to make these tough decisions. Did they say why those particular schools? Did they give any kind of explanation to these parents who are obviously deeply concerned and pretty upset tonight? They can tell them why those two schools made the list for being closed down.
Yeah, so they originally had seven schools on the potential chopping block way back when this plan was first introduced back in January. And at the time, they said these were the schools that had experienced the biggest enrollment drops. As we know, enrollment is dropping, not just in Bellevue, but across the entire country for several reasons. One just being birth rates are lower. Another being in the Seattle and Bellevue area in particular, people moving out of the area because they can no longer afford to live here. And then another big one is a lot of parents pulled their kids out of the public school system during COVID when they saw the kind of education their kids were getting during remote learning. They weren't happy with it, so they decided to go private or to do homeschooling. And I think that's a lot of what we've seen in Bellevue. It is a wealthy area, and a lot of those who could afford to chose to go the private route. What I actually spoke to a parent tonight after the meeting who had gone private, was going to pull his kids out of private school and put them back into public schools in Eastgate Elementary, but now he's decided, nope, I'm staying private.
So Nicole Jennings with us again, Cairo News Radio, about the announcement of two schools, elementary schools, closed. Tonight it was announced that Eastgate and Wilburton Elementaries will be closed. Do we know how many students overall will be affected and be relocated?
I don't know that off the top of my head, but
my apologies. Hundreds at each school, and they're going to be spread out across different schools as to not just create an explosion of overcrowding at one school. Right? So they're going to be going to different locations. I imagine closest to their homes is how they'll be delegated out to these other schools.
Right. I believe each one of those schools has kind of two other elementary schools that they would be folded into. But, you know, it's not just that simple. It doesn't mean that, oh, okay, well, this one is closest, so I could still walk there. You know, these are neighborhood schools where a lot of the parents chose to buy their homes there so that their kids could walk to school, their kids could walk to their friends' homes. And now in a lot of cases, they will no longer be able to do that. Many parents I've talked to, Eastgate Elementary parents, say that their kids will have to go to school on the other side of I-90. Well, that's not really very walkable for a kid, not very safe. And it also means, you know, even if the kids can take the bus to school, sure, but parents, when you're driving to school events, watching your kids in the band concert or, you know, picking them up from soccer practice after school or what have you, it adds to your commute time. As we know, traffic is bad in the region. And so it's just that much more time to have to spend behind the wheel of the car.
Now, are there any options for these parents of, is this a done deal? If it's been decided, there's no appeal process or anything like that for these parents?
You know, I'm actually not sure about that. And the parents I talked to tonight weren't totally sure either, because I did ask them, can you appeal this? Is the fight over? And they tell me, no, the fight's not over yet. They're looking into what their options are now. One parent did mention legal action to me, so I think a lawsuit is not off the table.
Wow, interesting. Nicole, thank you so much. Nicole Jennings, Cairo News Radio, live at the Bellevue School District meeting where it was announced that Eastgate and Wilburton Elementary Schools will be closing down. Thanks so much, Nicole.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Well, that's a tough nut for parents to take in. You know, I mean, Matt, I can remember back to elementary school how important it is to have a community elementary school that's your parents. I mean, like Nicole said, a lot of people, they decide where to live based on the school system itself and the particular school in that neighborhood. It's a big thing to lose to have your kids' elementary school be underfunded, a $31 million budget shortfall. And to Nicole's point, she brought it out made it very well that there's a drop in attendance, and it wasn't economically feasible to keep these schools open when you don't have full class sizes and, you know, people have moved out of the area because of higher prices and cost of living and home values, and they can't stay, and kids moving on to private schools or homeschooling because of COVID. So it was inevitability, and that's not making any decision by the Bellevue School District to help consolidate these students into less schools and cut costs of operating schools was going to make some parents very unhappy. You know, when I was in elementary school, I was in Baltimore, Maryland, and we moved. You know, my parents moved, and I got into a different school in the later years of my elementary school education, grades 4, 5, and 6. And it's a difficult thing for the kids. We talk about the parents and the inconvenience of moving around and, you know, drive times and extracurricular activities. It's tough on the kids as well. When you're that young, the bonds, social bonds you make in a school are as important as the education you get. One of the things we mentioned about school closures and the impact it's had on kids is the lack of socialization and the lack of community schools provide for young people as they're learning those social skills as well as academic skills. It is a tough situation. I appreciate Nicole's coverage. When my folks moved across the town in Baltimore from the house I was born in to the bigger house in a nicer neighborhood, and we're not talking gated or anything like that, but it was, you know, a little more suburban. And my first experience, my first year at the new school was miserable. It was a group of kids that were that all knew each other since kindergarten. They were together. I was this new kid from the wrong side of town, completely different vibe than my new neighborhood delivered. And it was so bad that, Matt, I ended up going back to my old elementary school for fifth and sixth grade. And I would take public transportation. You know, I would take three city buses by myself in the fifth and sixth grade. I would take a first bus, 19, connect to a 22, connect to a 5. I spent about an hour and a half every morning taking a bus to elementary school. But the kids these days, I don't know if we have that option for them. And it wasn't pleasant, I can tell you that. You went to what kind of town, Matt, when you grew up in elementary school? Where were you?
I was in a fairly large-sized town in Florida at the time. It wasn't a small school by any means.
Your elementary? And you got to go for the same school for your entire elementary years?
No, I was actually homeschooled for a number of years.
I didn't realize
which
that.
Which probably explains a lot, good and bad. But no, I was in elementary school for a number of years and transitioned to homeschooling when we moved.
Gotcha. Well, it's tough to be the new kid in school, and I feel for these kids, and I feel for these families. And as Nicole mentioned, the parents say there's still a fight involved, and there may be legal action involved. So as the story develops, we'll keep you up to speed. Big stories today also out of Metro, Seattle Metro. That story that Lisa brought us in the news, the writer, Zachary Meredith, took it to the state Supreme Court. This writer in the Metro was approached by security officers, and I believe they were law enforcement officers, and asked to provide his proof of fare. And the rider didn't have proof of fare, ended up being arrested, and his case went over to the state Supreme Court that the officers who were doing a check on fares didn't have the right to search him. And the Supreme Court in Washington today ruled that he was right. Just being on a train, a Metro, light rail, in the state of Washington doesn't necessarily forfeit your right to privacy, to be questioned by law enforcement. Now, I know it just seems like a unique situation, a weird situation, because you're on the train. It seems to me asking if you've got a ticket seems pretty reasonable. The problem is there was no posted notification that being on the train will subject you to being asked about your fare and about a proof of fare. One of the things that the court said today was there is no barrier to this light rail system in Washington. I mean, I know you have to buy a ticket, but it isn't like New York City where there's a turnstile.
Yeah.
And you physically have to break a barrier to ride without a fare.
Because I wasn't here at that time, do you know why they chose not to have one?
The barriers?
Yeah.
I don't. That's a great question. I think it was an ease of access for folks getting on the Metro. You know, we've got a very modern system here with Orca cards, and they're used in so many different, you know, opportunities to use public transportation in Seattle. It's just that definition of what is a barrier. You need, if it's not a physical barrier that you're crossing, then, you know, you have the right to just walk on, and they don't have the right to ask you if you've paid the fare. That just seemed very strange to me, but that's what the Supreme Court decided. And the Supreme Court decided it's still constitutional to require a fare. That was nice to see. That we still will make you pay for things that cost money in this state. That seemed a little ridiculous, but it's nice to know that they're still going with the, hey, if we say it costs a buck to ride the thing, you better pay the buck to ride the thing, not just hop on. And I know we're not charging folks with crimes for so many light violations these days. They're not pulling folks over with expired tabs, with equipment problems. Police are not making those a priority. But at least as far as, you know, getting on the train, what they're going to do is going to post signs that notify people. The problem was the gentleman in question, Zachary Meredith, who took his case to the state Supreme Court, wasn't notified in writing or in advance that boarding the train might make him subject to questioning from rail officials. And so he just he used that defense, and problem was when they were asking him about his ticket and he didn't have one, they then uncovered that he was wanted on several other outstanding warrants. And he was arrested. And he's argued that they had no right to even ask him what he was doing there or request to see his ticket. Therefore, the discovery that he had outstanding warrants was a violation of his rights. And the Supreme Court ruled with him. Well, good on him for getting a lawyer and, you know, covering himself. That's, you know, we all have a right to a fair trial by jury by our peers, the whole nine yards in this country. That's how it works. The other story in the Metro today is that they are going to invest, the city has announced, is going to invest to make the rides safer and cleaner. They're going to add gate agents. They're going to add on-train security. They've contracted with four different security outlets in Seattle to help make people who ride the trains feel safer when they're on them. They're going to make the trains cleaner. They're going to guarantee that the stations and the platforms are better lit and more maintained in the way of cleanliness. And there's going to be security in the trains and at the stations. So good on you. Good on you, Metro. I know Tacoma's not going to get their station for another 5 years longer. Going down to the T-Dome link has been delayed again. But when you do get on a train, you should feel safer. You should see a cleaner station and a cleaner train. You will be asked for your ticket. Because believe me, once this guy took him to the Supreme Court and the state lost, they will put up signs saying if you're on this train, you should have paid a fare, and we reserve the right to check and boot off folks who don't pay. I mean, I know that the fares generate very little of the operating capital of the Seattle and King County Metro system, but it's a part of the budget they can't afford to just give away. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike Neal along with Matt Butler. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Nice. Welcome back. Who is this? Not Elvis Costello.
This is Joe Jackson from 1979, the album called I'm the Man.
I'm the man who invented the hula hoop. The man who invented the yo-yo. That's him. So, you know, this, Matt, you know what influencers are, right?
Oh, boy, do I. What we used to call personalities, you know, DJs, talk show hosts, now we've got influencers.
Well, there's such a wide...
At 20, you can become a freaking millionaire.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And then ruin your life.
Well, there are, you know, it's funny, we talk about drag shows quite often around here and on the rest of the day as well. We talk about what a wide variety of different kinds of drag there are. Well, there's also a wide variety of a different kinds of influencers. You know, influencers can be anybody as extravagant as, say, the Kardashians. You know, and not the Kardashians from Star Trek, the Kardashians from California. These ladies have fashioned billions of dollars, a billion-dollar empire, from being someone that's a trendsetter. You know, someone who has influence over people who follow them on social media.
Everything you're saying just makes me want to walk into Lake Union.
And you could be an influencer by doing that, by taking other people who are fed up with this.
And they would probably follow me because that's just how sad society is.
And if we can monetize that, why wouldn't we do that for you, buddy? We love you.
Doing it for the gram.
Some influencers, I've got a friend who works in radio, and they've got a kid now who's like a high school age kid. Well, this kid is coming up in the right era and wanted to become an influencer with a teenage girl with makeup tips and started doing her own little videos on how to apply makeup tastefully, you know, and for kids who don't have older sisters or parents that are involved or friends that can show them, it's helpful to have somebody on social media who can show you, you know, what brands to wear or what brands to try. They can do product testing.
You know what I'm going to do, Spike? I'm going to be an influencer. And you know what I'm going to be an influencer for?
What?
Being an individual and doing your own damn thing.
Well, but you, Matt, see, I understand the frustration because I think vacuous people who just get on and get paid to model sunglasses and get millions and millions of dollars, it drives me nuts too. It drives me nuts. but your musical tastes, you could be an influencer. You really could.
I should be.
You should be. And I, you know, when I was in radio 12 years ago, I want to say, and it was kind of coming to the point where, look, radio as we know it is devolving. And the only way you're going to be able to take care of your family, Spike, is if you start pursuing other avenues of content income generation, right? This was my agent at the time telling me this. And he had this nice chart, big circle with all these different spokes coming off of it. All the things that my skills could be used to monetize and generate other platforms of income. And I, in my, at the time, late 40s, was like, I'm not learning new, I'm not doing that. I'm going to talk on the radio and somebody's going to pay me because I'm good. Well, I wish I had listened to him 12 years ago.
I'm willing to make a bet, too. I doubt your agent represented many people who focused on the music. It was about the personality. It was about content that could be multi-platformed.
Right, right.
The idea of curating music is a lesser in vogue skill, and I doubt those people even need agents because they ain't making that kind
That's
of money.
Fair enough. But I guess my point is there are good influencers out there. You know, there are influencers that help people, but there's far too many examples of bad influencers out there. And sometimes influencers can be flat out dangerous. The story comes up because there was a gentleman who passed away recently. Let me get his name here. I don't want to just, you know, I want to try to be respectful as best I can. Danny Lemoy, his name is Danny Lemoy. And he had followers on his YouTube channel. I mean, Jack Stein, who I'm getting the pleasure of working with during the middays.
Human Genius is his YouTube channel. He does a great job with that.
And that's the thing. There are ways to create content and kind of break out of the mold of only radio station owners can decide who gets to talk to an audience, right? And you get social media channels like Jack Stein's YouTube channel or an influencer's YouTube channel, and there's ways to get your product in front of an audience.
Yeah, and not to go too far into the weeds, I can see pluses and minuses, but yet at the same time, when everybody is splintered into doing their own thing, but there are no cultural leaders, there are no cultural voices like they were in the great eras of the past, the 60s and such, the 80s with the punk and new wave movements. When you don't have that and everybody's kind of siloed in their own thing, it also makes it harder for people to interact, to mix influences, and to monetize it. It becomes less of a thing when everybody's in their very narrow slice of the pie.
But you'd be amazed how well a little slice of the pie will pay. I mean, you know, for example, my friend's daughter, who's now in high school, you know, may have had, I don't know, first 10,000 followers as a kid in middle school. That's amazing. And now 100,000 followers.
And but is that healthy for young people to be that popular at a young age? I don't even think popularity is inherently healthy.
Well, it's a great question. And it's a dangerous position to put a kid in. Because that, even at an early age, the pressure to keep that audience or grow that audience, you know, can be dangerous, can be unhealthy.
And just living your life in the public eye, and especially if you're somebody, you know, it can cause you or exacerbate mental health struggles. Like, there are a ton of concerns with people who aren't fully developed in their minds becoming suddenly rich and famous.
Well, at that point, you're hoping that there is supervision, parenting. Right. This my friend's kid has paid for their own college education. We'll never have to take on any student debt. The parent didn't let him just get big headed and, you know, instantly, you know, rich by teenager standards and do stupid things, make bad decisions with the money, even get into trouble with money. You know, good parental supervision. That kid now has a fully paid, prepaid college education. And they're again, they're doing it. They're like it's kind of a service type channel an influencer with makeup tips and try this product and I didn't like this product. We had a story a couple weeks ago about de-influencers, folks that are trying products and they don't work and they put that information out as kind of a, you know, a consumer reports type influencing, de-influencing. Where it gets dangerous is with this gentleman here, Danny Lemoy. He was a COVID anti-vax ivermectin influencer with literally 500,000 followers. And he wasn't alone in that arena. And I don't want to get into a debate about whether ivermectin was effective. And there's information that the FDA couldn't have gotten emergency authorization for its COVID vaccine if there was another viable option for COVID out there, like ivermectin. So ivermectin got pushed aside so they could get this moved through quickly through the emergency authorization process. I don't know the details. I don't want to speculate on the details. I'm talking about influencers themselves. This the banner that these guys fly under with not just with ivermectin. In fact, Danny Lemoy didn't die from COVID because he was taking ivermectin. He died from cancer because he believed that eating apricot seeds, I guess they are, apricot pits, was a cure, was a natural cure for cancer. And he was on social media telling folks this. It's a natural cure. Don't believe what big chemo is telling you, or, you know, that thing. It's, they call it health freedom. You know, freedom to make your own health decisions. And that is just so medical freedom, they called it. Medical freedom. That is so, it's dangerous. You hear all the time about people who have, or influencers, and they give mental health advice to young kids, to teenagers who are going through, as we know, teenagers kind of going through some of the worst mental health struggles in any generation's history because of the lockdown of COVID and the isolation therein, doing things remotely through Zoom. So kids have mental health strains and a mental health crisis. People get on to become mental health influencers with no training. And people like Danny Lemoy, who is championing medical freedom and promoting, you know, apricot pits as a cure for cancer. Apricot pits contain cyanide. That's a poison. The guy poisoned himself because he didn't want to be told what to do by somebody who went to medical school. You're not going to get me with your fancy 12-year education. I mean, that's what I say. Influencers can be helpful. It can be a great career opportunity. It can do good, but far too often it's dangerous because we're letting everybody, you know, become an expert in their field.
I call that common senselessness.
That's good. That's really good. It's, you know, people say it's thinning the herd. I don't want to be disrespectful to a guy who died from cancer. But when a guy who's in his 40s, as Danny Lemoy was, you know, when he foregoes modern, established medical treatments for the sake of medical freedom and dies, it's a cautionary tale. You know, I would say that's spelling freedom with the B at the end, but I don't want to be disrespectful. I guess I just did. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll be right back. This be I'm the Man? Yeah! Matt Butler on the board and the music. I'm Spike O'Neill. It's Cairo Nights. Texter's really engaged in the topics we've had on tonight. Somebody asked when I was mentioning the light rail and the transit, adding officers for platform security, for on-train security. What about the buses? You know, what about the buses? Are we still going to allow people to smoke fentanyl because secondhand smoke isn't dangerous on buses? You know, one of the things that the rail changes are trying to address is cleanliness and safety. And I think it's impossible to have a public transportation system in Seattle that that speaks to championing cleanliness and safety without addressing the buses that people ride more often than the light rail. I mean, the light rail is just, you know, it's one line and it's going to be another 12 years till it gets to the T-Dome. We have buses on just about every major thoroughfare in Seattle. They're used by a ton of the citizens. And people don't feel safe. And they shouldn't feel safe. When you've got, you know, drug use on the buses and you've got the health department of Seattle, of King County, saying we want people using drugs in public, so if they OD, we can rescue them. Well, that seems to me to be at the expense of the citizens who also deserve to feel safe and be safe on our public transportation systems. And a texter points out here, we're not talking about police officers. If I said officers, I apologize. Security agents. Metro has contracted with four different security organizations to make sure that there is adequate security on these trains. And they have no arrest authority. That's true. Thank you. Texters are, like I said, always very good. Always very involved in the show, and I appreciate that. I've been saying for the months and months and months, Matt and I have been doing the show together, I hope to leave the show smarter than when I showed up. And as we all have learned, it's low bar to get over for me. But I try to give you as much information. I try to do as much research as I can. And when we speak and we're not quite sure, we'll tell you we're not quite sure. When we make errors in the comments that we make and you guys have better information, I appreciate the backup. You guys are officially unpaid producers of the Cairo Nights radio show.
Hey, now.
Congratulations. Well, you're the paid producer. I said unpaid. Unpaid production.
But you don't give unpaid people a title of sure. a skilled job.
No. That's what you do. That's all you give them is a title. You ever see what movie was it? It's called State and Maine. Hey, we'll make him an associate producer. Right? Everybody in the film who ain't getting paid, we'll make you an associate producer. By the way, did you ever see State and Maine?
I did not.
Okay, State and Maine. A little movie quick. Sidebar. Thanks so much, Frank Summer, on the movies this week. I love having Frank on. Movie called State and Maine. Alec Baldwin, Sarah Jessica Parker, Philip Seymour Hoffman, William H. Macy.
Ooh, I've got to see this. I don't even care what it's about.
It is, Charles Durning. It's an incredible, incredible movie, all character driven. It's about a movie company that loses its location site 85%, 90% through a movie because the lead actor, the star of their movie, Alec Baldwin, is a womanizer who's got a taste for young girls. And they get thrown out of their town and they got to find a way to finish their movie with no budget left to build a town. And they ascend on this cool little town. And it's a hilarious, it's a hilarious comedy, romance comedy. It's a wonderful movie, State and Maine. Some of the things they talk about, how the movies are made, unbelievable. The operators should feel safe too. I agree with you. When we brought up the story about secondhand fentanyl being smoked on buses and how the county said it has no effect because all the dangerous elements of fentanyl when smoked or stay with the smoker and the exhale has no, the exhaust, I guess, the human exhaust has no dangerous components. But far too many people have pointed out drug use isn't a clean business. And when you're burning fentanyl to smoke fentanyl, you're releasing these fumes into the atmosphere. Over 16 drivers have taken medical leaves, seeking restitutions and treatment for second exposure to secondhand fentanyl use on our buses. And it's not, I know secondhand weed smoke has a lot of potential.
Oh boy, does
I'm
it.
Telling you. I've been to enough concerts outside in Seattle to know. Walking down the sidewalk after the show last week, I felt funny on the way driving home. Anyway, it's Cairo Nights. When we come back, the price of housing has gotten so crazy, people are buying half a house. I'll tell you why. Coming up, Cairo Nights. Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll be back right after these.